Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 785. It's the 25th of May, 2017. On the podcast today, I have Dave Whitby, CEO of Andlas Energy and Power, ADL ticker there, and Dave talks about their recent fundraise and developments at the company. Plus, Paul Gazzard, non-executive director of Duke Mount Capital, DKE is a ticker, and Paul covers today's news, which is a letter of intent they've signed for their first acquisition. Plus, I have John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel, talking about Codal Minerals. And Chris Bailey, founder of Financial Orbit, covers Daily Mail and General Trust, Petrofac and Wizz Air. Also on the podcast, Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talks about Cadence, that's KDNC, and Wyn Canton, ticker there is Wyn. And as always, I've got the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours and the top five most liked RNSs on the platform this morning.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Dave Whitby, CEO of Andlas Energy and Power. It's ADL ticker. Dave, thanks for coming on.
It's nice to be back, Justin.
We haven't even spoken this year. I think it was August last year we spoke, so it's nice to get you on. And I mean, you're still a very well-followed company, even though, you know, you haven't been on the podcast for a while. People have still been asking for you to come on the podcast, so it's nice to come on. So it's good stuff. So listen, people who are not aware of ADL or Dave, can you give a summarise as to what the business is all about, please?
Okay, ADL is a company that's focused in Indonesia. We have been in Indonesia as principals since before 1990, so it's our home court. The strategy of the company is to identify undeveloped gas and convert it into power to serve the needs of the country, particularly in Sumatra. We will be the IPP developer, but the strong focus is us knowing where the gas is, because gas is key. So we are taking gas fields that we have identified, and there is a plethora of them, and putting them into IPPs and then tying them into the electrical grid. A very elegant strategy, I think.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the last announcement you made was the placing, lifting of suspension and operations update. So take us through that, Dave. Take us through some of the highlights there. You raised, what, £600,000?
Yeah, we closed the placement earlier the week at £600,000. It was above the recent close. But I think equally important is the directors and substantial shareholders have really backed the company. For us, we took a major portion of it. And honestly, we are excited about where we are. It's not just the support and the belief, but it's the excitement where we have been working hard and long for the last year, laying the groundwork to a significant value proposition. And today we think we're at the crossroads of that value proposition and ready to harvest that for the company, for our shareholders, and for Indonesia. So it's really a very exciting time for us.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't mind, you know, CEOs don't like to comment on a share price or something. They say, you know, the work they do hopefully will be reflected in the share price. But you know the potential there, and you've signaled the potential there all along. But as yet, you know, you are hitting sort of historic lows here. What do you think is happening, Dave? Why isn't it, you know, aligning with your prophecy here?
Well, I think it's pretty simple. We're building a really significant company here. We have a very strong strategy. We're supported by the national interest. We have a number of opportunities to grow the value proposition of the company. The strategy is sound. The one thing that you're always faced, particularly in the gas industry, is it does take longer than most people think. So we are in that process. We've laid the groundwork. And honestly, we are excited about where we're going to go in the not-too-distant future. We believe we are ready to as I said, at that crossroads of delivering material, quantifiable sort of progress, particularly on our first project.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it is always good to see directors taking, you know, a bit more skin in the game. And is this the first of many? Can you see this happening again? You know, directors stepping up to the plate here and taking more?
Well, I think from a director's perspective, one, it's nice that we show leadership and support for our own company. That's a given. But this is also a really good investment for us. You know, we believe in where we're going. We believe in the country. We have a lot of experience in Indonesia. Indonesia is sort of an opportunity for believers. And we've worked a long time in the gas industry in Indonesia, and we believe it. We know where it's going. We know we're going to be a part of it. We developed a relationship with Pertamina. You know, Pertamina is the national oil company of the country. You know, and Indonesia is the fifth largest country on the planet. And they have a large inventory of these small gas fields. I had the opportunity to work with Pertamina back in 2008-09. That relationship is warm and trusting. And they are our partners in the concept of Wellhead IPP. And I think that's important to talk about the Wellhead IPP. What it is to actually build the wellhead, or build the IPP right on the wellhead in the gas field, to reduce the cost of gas, to reduce the capital, and to bring it on faster. The government recently released a brilliant regulation called Regulation 11-2017 that defined clearly the role of wellhead IPPs in the overall power mix in Indonesia. The present government put a target of 35,000 megawatts of incremental generating capacity by 2019. That represents 60% increase. So the national interest is absolutely clear to generate power. And we have found ourselves with a very strong competitive advantage and a niche player being gas people who can identify the gas and then can build a consortium to put in a small power plant, 30 or 40 megawatts type power plant, and get them on quickly. One thing that's really important to us all and to the value proposition of the company going forward, you take a small gas field that's 30 BCF. 30 BCF in my business is almost to be ignored. But in a country like Indonesia, 30 BCF can power a 20 or 25 megawatt power plant for 20 years. 25 megawatt power plant can service 40,000 homes. And 40,000 homes can deliver power to 120,000 people. Back when we started this, there's as many people in Indonesia that don't have power that live in the UK. Just puts the scope of the value proposition and the growth that we have. We have identified in South Sumatra in excess of 100 gas fields, that they're small, but we've screened them out. We can identify which ones are applicable to the IPP business. And so that is our project pipeline. But our real focus now is that we've been grinding out getting our first project defined. And we have the first move advantage, but there's also the first move disadvantage. We have a competitive advantage, but we are the ones that are setting the tone, setting the place for how to do these. So our first project is our total focus. We're now at the crossroads where we are focusing at securing the gas sales from Pertamina, and we're also focusing on getting a more distinct relationship with Pertamina to start our first project. Mm-hmm. This is the time for us to, I guess, harvest the hard work that we put in for the last year or two. So this is the time that we're pretty excited about where we are and where we're going, and the country needs us.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, if you look at it, I mean, you know, like you say, you are in the fifth biggest country in the world that has an issue, a shortfall of electricity, and, you know, they really want to power this up via gas or any other means. So you've got the country, you know, the government behind you, and Pertamina, they're all in the gas estate there behind you. So why are people now, do you think people are not seeing this potential? What's the issue that's holding the share price back here? Do they not believe this can happen, or is it the funding, or what's going on? Why do you think that is, people not seeing
honestly,
this?
I think it's a combination of how long it takes. Mm-hmm. And when you're building something really important or really big, it really doesn't happen overnight. We believe we have a value proposition that is substantial. Our first project, we call it the proof of concept, and it moves into, we use that cookie cutter to scale up. So we believe we are sort of at the right place, at the right, building something very, very serious. And unfortunately, it takes longer than most people think.
Yeah.
And I can't apologize for that. I've been in the gas industry in Indonesia a long time. From my perspective, when we signed our cooperation agreement with Pertamina in September last year, the progress we've made is absolutely outstanding. But unless you can have that perspective, you can quite easily say, well, nothing's happening. Well, I can assure our shareholders that things are happening on all fronts.
Yeah, yeah. I think for a while, one of the concerns is obviously funding. I mean, are you concerned about that in any way going forward?
No, I'm not concerned about that. The projects we build are all project financed. Like this is security from a gas sales agreement to a power purchase agreement. So the project financing is out there. But also, we have been approached and been talking to export credit agencies, aid agencies, because Indonesia is that place where aid agencies are very active and very strong. And that's part of it. Once we get the key contracts or the key documents in place, that opens the door to an entirely different source of funds that are not normally available to a publicly listed company. So we have got a number of, I guess, avenues to pursue to fund the projects and move them forward. And so, yeah, funding is probably actually the least of my worry. What I want to do is that I'm not necessarily a patient man, and we've got the right people, we've got the right strategy. We are working hard. Just last week, our crew was out in Jambi, looking at the site with Pertamina, our partner, and meeting the power company and looking at where the transmission line goes and looking at the land acquisition. And you start that process. You don't initiate that type of activity just on spec. You initiate that activity when your confidence level has risen to the point where you are confident that you're going to be able to deliver on the strategy. Pertamina putting their reputation on the line along with this is not an insignificant thing as well. So all of the ducks are lining up in my mind, and we have taken a long time to do it. But in our industry, from my perspective, it's a pretty short time. So we're at that crossroads, Justin.
This
is the time when we sort of laid all the groundwork, and now it's time to, to start getting it over the line.
Yeah. Okay. Go on.
Please. No, sorry.
So one final question before we get the three reasons why someone should follow you. So you talk about time a lot. So what are the time frames here? Is there any you can sketch out for people?
Well, it's sort of difficult to sketch it out in detail, but one thing we can say is when we sort of get the approval process over, these small wellhead IPPs, they're mobile, they're plug and play, so you can actually construct them relatively quickly and tie them in. Land acquisition is a big thing, a big worry in Indonesia to most, but these small power plants, they only take less than a hectare, which is, you can put them on the half of a football pitch. Mm-hmm. So from our perspective, once we get the critical documents in place, the regulations kick in, the national interest kicks in, and it moves at quite a pace. Yeah. So as I say, we've spent since September till now getting, as I say, the foundation laid. And now we're at that point where we're looking forward to deliver in relatively short order.
Marvellous stuff. Well, if someone's listening right now and they like the potential that could be offered them there at ADL, could you give them, but they're not following you as yet, David, so could you give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page, please?
Well, I think the first thing is that we are confident that we have the right strategy. And that right strategy is wanted by the country. Our partner wants it, and it is a strong growth strategy. I think that's the first thing. If you get the strategy wrong, you're sort of dead in the water. I think the second thing is that we have laid the groundwork that we are at that crossroads to harvest the work, the relationships, and the technical work that we have done. And I think the third one is that we are focusing our attention totally on our first project now. We've completed our screening. Once we get the first one going, we know where the next ones are going to be. But we're at that point where we're ready to deliver sort of material and quantifiable reports and progress on the first project. So we are at that point of, I consider it breakthrough change, Justin.
Marvellous. Dave, good to chat to you. And listen, don't be a stranger for as long next time. So hopefully we'll chat again soon. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much for your time.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Paul Gazzard, Non-Executive Director of Duke Mount Capital. DKE is the ticker there. Paul, thanks for joining me.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Now, you've had an RNS out today, a bit of significant news. We'll get to that in a bit. But for people, and I know you're newly listed, people not aware of you, could you explain or summarise what the business is all about, please?
Okay, yes, I would be happy to. Duke Mount Capital it has been set up to bring deals together so that they are palatable in size and scale and shape for investing institutions seeking high yield. And we are going to be doing a combination of developing those deals and building them out, or structuring deals so that other people can invest alongside us and invest in those assets. And so this is about building out and supporting the supported living sector, working primarily with housing associations and developers to grow their portfolio.
Excellent. So how does this work in practice? So you guys go out there, you find a portfolio of properties that have been pre-let, and then you package all these up together and you put this towards big sort of pension funds, institutions who are looking for high yield. That's the way it works, is it?
Primarily, that's it in a nutshell. So we are working with housing associations, working with developers who want to build out these assets in this high growth sector. There's a huge amount of support from all parties to grow this sector. And we are then taking those assets, either investing in them ourselves so they're developed out and are ready to be invested in or purchased by yield-seeking institutions, or packaging them up as an aggregated group of transactions and then allowing investors like us, or developers like us, to invest in them and benefit from that yield.
Okay, and so you sort of the go-between, I suppose, and you help facilitate these sort of transactions. But so why wouldn't, for example, a housing association do this on their own? Just approach, say, a pension investor or big company to invest in them.
Well, typically transaction sizes are small in this area. There are definitely, that's not to say there aren't large ones, but the particular niche that Duke Mount operates in is going to be transactions of these sorts of sizes, maybe 3, 5, 7, 10 million type size transactions, aggregating them up into larger portfolios so that then they become appealing to the institutions on their own. At this size, no institution would have the time, energy or inclination to be able to address this as an individual transaction. So we're filling that gap, if you like, but also it's down at a size where we can participate in the development of these and help them be built out and give support to those housing associations and developers to get these transactions done and in a state, either as part of a portfolio or in their own right, where they can then become appealing to the larger investing institutions. And that is quite a niche. That's quite a good example of where our USP exists as a company.
Yeah, and is there demand? I mean, like you said, you have to bring them up to a certain size to get even institutions to take a look at and be interested in. And so is the demand, obviously, from the institution side, are there?
Huge demand. There was a report out last year by a very large financial institution which indicated that pension funds and life insurance companies have a gap in the market where they have an appetite for up to 1.6 and growing trillion of demand for this type of product. So there is enormous demand, and like I said, there's also huge support from this growing sector from all political parties. So we find ourselves in the middle of two very nice dynamics, and we are very much hoping to benefit from that and help both parties get what they need.
Excellent. Okay, well, listen, you are, like I said, a newly listed company. First day of dealings was on the end of March 29th. And here we are in May. You've signed a letter of intent, signed for the first acquisition. So can you take us through the detail here, please, Paul?
Certainly. Would be a pleasure. We are in the first 90 days of being listed. When we listed, we did explain we had a pipeline of transactions, none of which were signed at the time. And that, of course, has grown significantly since we've come to market, just from the publicity that one gets from being listed. So this transaction represents the first step in building what will be a portfolio of properties, all of which will be focused on supplying to investing institutions high yield investments. We will be, in some cases, investing in these individual assets, providing them with structuring and finance help for developing out these projects, and then ultimately we'll be owning the freehold, as was explained at the time of listing. But we will be attempting to get these yields packaged up and sold on to other people who are looking for these sorts of yields, and thus us benefiting in the middle for facilitating that transaction.
Yeah, and so the letter of intent is with Larch Housing Association, and what will you be doing with them?
Yes, Larch Housing Association. So we'll be, the management team will be looking at the selection of properties they have under their remit, and effectively doing extended due diligence on each of those to identify the ones that fit the model, of which there are numerous. And I guess we have those under exclusive periods where we will identify those and then progress to build those out over the course of the agreement, and then look to be selling those on or packaging them up with other investments to produce a portfolio that is appealing to another investor base, of which we have huge demand and are in complete contact with all the time.
Yeah, so this is your first one, and I assume, obviously you can't reveal any details, but I assume you have a sort of a pipeline of sort of opportunities you're looking at. Is that the case?
Well, we do, absolutely, and that was the premise of the listing. So we did and do have a pipeline. It is now about getting to this stage with as many of those opportunities as possible, so firming those up. And since we listed 2 months ago, of course, there's been feverish work done by the management team to get to this point, and it goes on. So yes, we would be very, very hopeful that we would be more announcements of this ilk coming down the line, and we'll start to see smaller and larger transactions of this nature, and starting to deliver on some of our commitments when we listed it, which is what we're all about.
Okay, well, I don't know if you have the answer to this question, but do you have any idea as the type of return you're looking to achieve yourselves at Duke Mod?
It'll vary. It will vary, and it will depend on the size of the portfolios that we're able to aggregate, the combined yield of those, and the investing demand, i.e. what the market's doing in terms of yield at that time. So it's very difficult for me to actually pin a number down, of course, but needless to say, it's the sort of transaction that we're looking at here, 50-year lease with a 6.5% CPI-linked yield, is bang in the target area that we said we'd be focused on, and exactly the sort of transaction that we're looking for.
Yeah, well, it's a very interesting business model, and you're on my watch list, and because when you first came out, I thought, that's so interesting. I've never kind of heard of that kind of, especially a listed company doing this, so it's very interesting. So, but if anyone's listening right now, and they're like me, they're quite interested in this business model, but they're not following you on Vox, Paul. Can you give them the three reasons why they should hit that follow button, please?
I certainly can. The housing association and supported living sector is supported by all three of the political parties, so we will be continuing to grow. Our model will be to continue to grow regardless of the outcome of the upcoming election. So we're in a growing sector. There is enormous demand from the investing institutions focused in this area. And we have a board which is singularly focused on our USP to bring those parties together. And we think in a quite unique way. We have a very interesting value proposition.
Excellent, Paul. Good to chat to you. And like you say, you've got a pipeline there, so no doubt we'll be chatting again in the not too distant future. Thank you very much.
Pleasure. Look forward to it, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. John, thanks for coming back on.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
So, John, we've covered CODL a couple of times on the podcast, and there's a bit of news that's come out that you see as significant, but you think the market's probably not reacting. But before we go into that, just give us a brief summary as to what CODL is all about, please.
CODL Minerals is drilling off what we see as a high-grade lithium pegmatite project in Mali, in West Africa. It's a spodumene type pegmatite, which means that it's the type of material that the lithium processing industry is particularly interested in. They like this material because it works better through their processing plants. It doesn't create dust in the way that lithium associated with tin does, and it's very much in demand. So it's important that for these guys to get their hands on it. And what we've seen is that the Chinese have come in and made a very significant investment through a group called Sui Chin. They set up this group in Singapore for the sort of the funneling and funding of money into groups like CODL and probably others. CODL is their first investment. They put in £500,000, followed then by another £4.3 million at a price of 0.38p. But of course, CODL shares just don't seem to have caught up with that at 0.33, I think, at the moment. So it's an interesting situation. I would expect the Chinese to continue to support CODL going forwards, because there's no point for them making this sort of investment if the project doesn't actually advance to production. And of course, with the market cap of hovering around 17, 18 million pounds, that's a long way off what this thing will be worth if it does prove up a very sensible resource and does actually head towards feasibility and eventually production.
Yeah, so can we judge or guesstimate the potential here at CODL if everything goes to plan?
Well, I think if one makes a comparison, the Chinese offered a price of 107 million Australian dollars for the project next door at Bougouni Limited. Birimian Limited. That offer didn't complete because the Chinese weren't able to get the money out of China at that time. And I'm not going to say too much about this, but shall we say that now that the investment has been made into CODL via a Singaporean company specifically set up for the purpose.
Yeah.
I think it shows that the Chinese are still very interested in buying into lithium production in this particular area and this type of spodumene mineralization.
Yeah, so you're saying there could be further potential here. So at the moment, yeah, I'm trying to look at the share price, and it hasn't. It's been a bit flat. It's quite good, though. I'm looking at all moving averages bunching up there, and it's almost waiting for some kind of significant news. And like you said, there's no telling why the share price didn't react on this, really, is there?
Well, we had some more drilling results that came out. They were back end of last week. They look perfectly respectable. In fact, no red flags there, which was good. And I think, well, yeah, it feels as if the market is just missing this one right now.
Yeah, okay. Well, thanks for bringing us our attention to it, John. So it's CODL Minerals. Ticker there is KOD. And John, thanks for coming on. Hopefully speak next week.
Thank you. Bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Chris Bailey, founder of financialorbit.com. Chris, you all right, fella?
Hi there, Justin. Yeah, very well, thank you. Very well.
Good. Now, listen, you are my eyes on the bigger cap market there. So what's been released today? What's the news, Chris?
Well, the news is the apt word, really, because we've had some numbers from Daily Mail and General Trust. Now, I know, obviously, not many people are going to admit reading the Daily Mail, but I bet loads of people go onto Daily Mail, the Daily Mail website, which is immensely popular. I read, actually, in their results that they have an average viewership of 15 million.
Yeah.
Which is absolutely amazing. Apparently, they're pushing into America as well. Big growth in America there. So clearly, the Trump presidency is pushing people towards the Daily Mail website. Who knows? But that was the good part of their results. I have to say, though, the shares are down sharply today, around about 8% as I speak to you. Mm. And the reason the shares are down is because, despite the omnipresence of the Daily Mail website and everything, I'm afraid the rest of the group is struggling in a sort of a media world which is under all sorts of pressure, not just the rise of digital, but sort of other aspects, things like the events business not pushing on as they hoped, and matters like that. It's been a difficult old time for them. And as I say, you take a look at the shares and having troughed at, I think it was around about 600 pence at the time of the Brexit referendum vote, and then rallying right up to sort of 800 odd pence, they're now down back below 700 pence, I'm afraid, heading south fast.
Yeah, that is a big bar drop off there, isn't it? So, and it's almost like saying maybe you should just rely on the website, you know, get rid of the paper.
Well, the paper actually is still nicely profitable
okay.
for them.
Don't do that.
No, absolutely. If you take a look at the numbers, a third of the profits still come from the newspaper bit, albeit that that's split between the digital bit and the print media bit. Their problem has been the rest of the group is just not shaping up as they hoped. They sold down some of their stake in Euromoney, which I'm sure you remember from your relative youth, as sort of a cutting edge publication talking about all sorts of sexy stuff in the financial world. Well, the reality is today, you know, the generalized output on things like Twitter and whatever is just as good. And guess what? It's free. Yeah. And consequently, Euromoney is struggling. They've sold down some of their stake there to raise a bit of money. And as I say, you look at the B2B business, you look at the information business, you look at the events business, it's struggling to crack on, really, in a world which is getting more competitive, different competitors and matters like that. So they also had a bit too much debt. And you know, we've talked a lot about the importance for any equity shareholder. You've got to look at the balance sheet of a company because, you know, if there's anything that wipes out your equity value better than anything else, forget profit warnings, forget management doing stupid things. The worst thing in the world is debt. Of course, when you combine debt with all those other aspects, that's when you have a real shocker. Yeah. But the Daily Mail and General Trust, they had a bit too much debt, and they still pay a pretty attractive dividend yield, you know, thick end of 4.5%. But actually, they do have some assets to sell down. Things like the Euromoney stake was sold down during the year. That did improve their balance sheet. But the reality is, my personal view is that thematically, you've got to wait to back again until you're back again towards that £6 level for a bit of relative value here. So all I'd say is perhaps go look at the website. Don't buy the shares yet.
Yeah, so they should keep the newspaper on the website, get rid of everything else, they should be fine, really. You know,
absolutely. The trouble is, you know, they're cognizant that they want to build a broad-based group, and, you know, the Rothermere's, who are the family behind this, you know, from a historic basis, you know, they were very big on building a big honking group. You know, you look at what the Murdochs have done, and what they have now. You know, remember they started off with a variety of newspaper assets in Australia. Then, of course, they made the big splash buying the Sun and the Times and whatever here. But now look at them with Sky and 21st Century Fox and everything else. The newspapers are a square root of a square root, albeit fantastic for that sort of, how can I put it, publicity profile, what to put an agenda out in the broader marketplace sort of angle, which, you know, just occasionally billionaires like to do.
Yeah, okay, cool. All right, anything else you're looking at, Chris?
Well, we've got to take a look at Petrofac. I mean, it's a stock, I don't own it, but I'm sure there's lots of people out there who are scratching their heads today and wondering what on earth is happening here. Because thematically, oil services actually looks quite interesting. You know, oil spending, oil services spending is starting to pick up in the States. You know, you're hearing that from sort of the big boys like the Schlumberger's and Halliburton's of this world. Yeah. And if you kind of figure out what sort of the Royal Dutch's and BP's are saying, then probably we're seeing the worst of the kind of the spending cuts and everything. We're kind of at that point where everything's known and it can only get better now. And obviously, there's been attempted consolidation. Hunting's bought a few things. Amec and Wood Group may still well come together. We'll have to see on that one. But Petrofac should therefore be in a better place. The trouble is they've been hit by two kind of corruption-related allegations in recent weeks. The COO has resigned. I think it was technically yesterday, but that news hit the market this morning. And the shares have come off materially, I think down about 15% last I looked. And if you take a sort of a multi-year share price chart, you would say to yourself, my goodness, the shares are now just over £5 a share. And if I pull the chart far enough, that's as bad as it's got in the kind of the pre-financial global financial crisis world of the last 10 or 15 years. So surely Petrofac is interesting. All I'd say here is whenever there's corruption allegations, we've got to make that very clear. It's just allegations, investigations and everything else. Yeah. Whenever there's that smell, unfortunately, it impacts shares. And if you're a long-term shareholder believing that Petrofac has the wherewithal, the contacts in places like the Middle East, the experience at the top level to prosper, then great. But my observation is I'm more of a tactical investor. I'd much rather give up the first 5% on them saying, actually, the authorities have investigated us. There's nothing to answer, or we paid a small fine because we did this and this wrong and we've learned from it and move on. I'd much rather have that useful information before I attempted to catch a falling knife here, to be honest.
Yeah.
And if I wanted to buy... Yes, well, sorry, Justin, go on.
Sorry, I say there's enough risk in investing as it is. You don't need to... Like, unforeseen risk that may come about, you know? Like I said, you're better off waiting until the good news comes in, then jumping in, you know? Yeah,
particularly some of the oil services where, you know, you're dependent on generally much bigger companies to give you contracts. Now, you know, in as I said, I think the thematics are not bad for oil services here. But my feeling is you should invest elsewhere. You know, if you desperately want to get access to the space, leave Petrofac alone. Let's see how it all pans out. Wait for the next RNS statement on these issues and go from there. You know, miss the first 5% for what, if it ultimately kind of semi-recovers, would be a 20-25% move. You know, trade off on that for a bit more certainty.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Okay, and anything else you're looking at, Chris?
Final one, Wizz Air. It's whizzing up. I had to make that joke, really. But you know, you and I talked about low-cost airlines quite a lot. EasyJet's been a cracking trade over recent months. Their share's 13.5 quid at the moment. You know, far better than that sub-10 quid level they were kicking around at a few months ago. Wizz Air's absolutely romped today on what looks like very good numbers. Yeah, there was a bit of sort of slightly cautious guidance about what may happen. You know, sort of let's see what happens over the summer period. But you have to say, thematically again, the growth of low-cost air travel in places like Central and Eastern Europe, where they are the number one player, even bigger than Ryanair, is very, very good. What caught my attention here were two things. Number one was the strong cash flow, and I love cash flow because cash is king and everything else, and particularly with airlines, which can have really lumpy kind of spending because they've got to buy or lease planes and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So I like that thematically. Obviously, there's a lot of concern about Europe at the moment, and my feeling is though the thematic travel growth of Central and Eastern Europe will continue apace, particularly if you have sort of a softish Brexit, you know, that would sort of be helpful there. But what really caught my eye is actually a technical indicator. Pull back the chart on Wizz Air over 3-4 years, and this circa 20 quid level on the shares has been a big barrier.
Yeah.
They push through it today. I'm not a great one for technical analysis, but I observed it. And my feeling would be if they can stay above this level, I like what they're saying fundamentally, and just maybe the technicals are giving it a tick in a box as well.
Yeah, well, do you know what? If looking at today's share price, it gapped open at £20 and went up now 21, 29, something. If the plane took off like that, you'd be panicking. It's like straight up, isn't it?
You would be, absolutely. That's right.
But yeah, you're right. That £20 level has been broken, and if it closes above that, there's a good gap there. It's a good now support level, you would think.
Yeah,
you know?
So my feeling is on the watch list. I say I still like EasyJet's been a great trade. There might be still a bit left in that one, but I wouldn't dissuade people from taking a few profits there, because frankly it's been marvelous.
Yeah.
But I think there is probably still a little bit left there. Wizz Air does interest me. I'm not a holder, but I have to say the news today was good. And thematically, I like what they're doing. And they look, judging by their presentation, you can tell a lot by the presentational tone of the company. And I just flicked through the presentation doc before I came to speak to you, Justin. And I have to say, it was a very professional presentation, was kind of representative of a company much bigger than they actually are, which actually is just what you want to see.
Yeah, and you know, I was surprised the stat that they're more popular in Eastern Europe and all that than Ryanair and everywhere. So, but like I said, today I definitely wouldn't be buying there, and because it's like, if you look at on another indicator on the chart, the relative strength index is showing majorly overbought. So it's very hot at the moment. Let it cool down. Let it land. Take your seat.
Absolutely.
Strap
That's
in.
It. What's that old phrase, Justin? You know, the old resistance becomes the new support. You do wonder whether that 20 quid level may well be that level.
Yeah, exactly. Let's come back to that. Marvellous. Chris, thanks very much, and speak next week.
Speak soon. Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. You're on, Al.
I'm very good, Jess. How are you?
Yes, I'm all right. It's, do you know what? The last 2 days have been absolutely roasting. In my office, though, doesn't seem to get any sun. And I literally, I have put a jumper on, and I leave the office, get really hot, take the jumper off. And it's like, it's really odd to be outside, and it's boiling hot, and yet coming here nice and cool. In fact, a little too cool. But anyway,
I'm very fortunate. I'm sitting in my house in Seaford. I'm looking over the South Downs from my office window. It's nice and cool in here, but I have a T-shirt and shorts on, just ready to go into the sun a little later on this morning.
I thought you were going to say a T-shirt, nothing else then, Al. I like to keep it breezy down there, you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Swing free on the downs.
Swing free. Okay. Swing free down south, yeah.
Yeah. All right, Al, what are you looking at?
Okay, well, couple of stocks I want to talk about today. Cadence Minerals, KDNC, and a company called Wincanton, WIN. Yeah. I'm going to start with Cadence Minerals. We've spoken about this before, and also, of course, Kieran Mazaria, the CEO, was recently on the podcast. Cadence Minerals, year high of just under a penny, and year low of 0.42p, and we're currently trading at 0.45 pence, giving the company a market cap of about 39 million. Now, Cadence, if you were looking for a fund to invest in rare earth minerals, that is metals such as lithium, neodymium, and tantalum, and other such metals that are going to be greatly in use in the brave new world we live in today, you could do a lot worse than look at Cadence, because it's effectively a mining investment company. So it's almost like a mining investment fund, and it invests in a number of projects, some of which are late stage, some of which are early stage. The news flow from the company over the past couple of months has been pretty impressive. I'll just reiterate some of the points we discussed in the past. They have a 30% joint venture with Bacchanora Minerals, on a project called the Sonora Lithium Project in Mexico, and that's also divided up with the Mexilit and Megalit contracts in the region as well. But essentially, that project has a net project value of about $800 million. So overall, the value to Cadence over that period of time is roughly 6%, which represents about $48-50 million, which is probably roughly in line with where the market cap is now. That's one project. Now, about 6 weeks ago, the company, Bacchanora, announced that it had agreed a takeoff joint venture with Japanese battery company Hanwha, which has sales of roughly 15 billion yen per annum. There are a handful of these arrangements around the world, so this is pretty significant. And obviously, it underscores the quality of the project, the quality of the lithium that's in the ground there. It has a 21% interest with European Metals Holdings in the Sinovec project, Sinovec lithium project in Czechoslovakia. And indeed, about 5 minutes ago, the company put out an RNS statement saying that European Metals had commenced drilling on that infill drilling on the Sinovec South project. So again, these are both Snorre and Sinovec are projects that are underway and are pushing forward. It's got some earlier stage projects. It has a joint venture with MacArthur Minerals on the Stonewall Lithium Project in the USA. The Stonewall Lithium Project, the company recently announced that 380 samples have been taken from that area. All of them contain lithium, which obviously is very good for the development of the project going forward. And the company also announced earlier this week its Yangibana joint venture with Hastings Technology Metals. The company had undergone a hydro metallurgy test on the the resource there. That basically means it uses aqueous solutions to extract metals from the samples it takes. And in that test, it achieved and exceeded the results that had been undertaken in the early laboratory tests. So again, that bodes very well for the project and clearly can move it on to the next stage. So it's got exposure to all these projects. Going back to Sinovec, the valuation for Cadence on the side of it project, that's got a net project value of some $540 million. Cadence is 21% interest puts it at about $113 million. So currently, with the valuation of the company at $39 million, there's no upside and no additional valuation has been attributed to the company at present for Sinovec, MacArthur Minerals joint venture, Stonewall Lithium Project, Yangibana, or any of the others. And I think if investors are looking to go into a prospective fund or company that's covering rare earth minerals, which are going to be increasingly in use, particularly for batteries and everything as we know in the future, then Cadence is probably one of the best companies that you could consider to do that.
Yeah, definitely worth doing some research. Didn't realize the chart there, the share price is at a low pretty much, isn't it? So
yeah, it is. It is.
It's also, I mean, it hasn't been this low since July of last year, where it tested the sort of 42 pence level. So interesting levels here. And it's gone from like this level just after, what was that? July, August, September last year. It went from 42. It doubled pretty much and yes, came back down slowly. So yeah, when you see that, it's almost like an insight into the future of what could be when you see a chart spike up like that and come back down. So it's worth looking at because, one thing, when you're looking at stocks that don't pay a dividend, it's always paying attention to what level you buy. I know this is the old adage, buy low, sell high, but some people get it wrong, and me included, we buy high and then, and so essentially, when you're looking at stocks, it's always good to check out the chart, just in case, it's not at an all-time high or about to hit resistance at a previous high, So, it's worth checking out. Marvellous. Go on, Al.
Just going to say as well, those net project value estimates were based on lithium costs being $6,500 per tonne of lithium carbonate. The price is now higher than that, and I think it's forecast to rise as high as $9,500. So those net project value estimates are fairly conservative. I'm sure Kieran would reiterate that point. But again, there are plenty of reasons to look at it at this stage. And as you say, it's spiked up to that level, indication of future value. Certainly want to watch, and if you want exposure to that sector, I don't think there's any better project or offering around right now to do that.
Right, marvellous. What's next there?
Okay, next we're moving closer to home. We're looking at a company called Wincanton, W-I-N. This is well-established company founded in 1925 in Chippenham in Wiltshire. And Wincanton is simply they supply chain solutions and logistics services throughout the UK and Europe. Warehousing, transport, distribution, construction records management, etc., etc. And the company, I think for a number of years, because I looked at this company some time ago, and although it paid a little dividend, it was fairly unexciting. The stock hadn't really performed. But this company was flagged up last year by my colleague, Dr. David Ball of Vectorvest. He looked at the company on December 21st and said that the company was starting to turn the ship around, and the earnings growth was looking encouraging. A number of metrics on the Vectorvest system had flagged the stock up. And this was when the stock was £2.33. It's since risen steadily to just over £3. And early this week, the Vectorvest published another blog on their site, just detailing the fact that the company had recently on May 17th delivered a 17% increase in pre-tax profits. Revenues had slipped to 2% due to the disposal of several loss-making contracts, but net debt at that stage also fell by 15 million to 24 million. It was down from 40 million previously. Strong cash generation, final dividend of 6 pence, full dividend of 9p. And the CEO was very bullish, said it was a strong set of results, and the company was better positioned than ever to invest and grow and to continue to grow in its markets. From a charting standpoint, the shares broken out of a consolidation pattern after trend line, it's tested trend line support, and it's also broken above its 52-week high. The Vectorvest system has raised the target, which was previously 356p, to £4.22. And this is a steady eddy of a company. You know, it's not suddenly going to sort of discover a lithium resource or anything along those lines. This is a steady growth company. What it's done, it's cut out its loss making operations, it's reduced its debt, and it's substantially improved its earnings. So that process will continue. So I think it's reasonable to expect, with the momentum the company's got now, that we're likely to see a re-rating from brokers in the next little while. The chart supports that view too, that with the charting breakout. So the next year, it looks to me to be a good opportunity to invest into a steady growing company. You'll earn a dividend en route, and who knows, you know, the share price could be much higher when we look at it again later on this year.
Yeah, well, hopefully, if people are invested, people are winning in that stock. You know, they
are.
Win.
Fantastic epic code too. Win.
Yeah, and almost the opposite kind of chart to Cadence there. And I know where I prefer to go, though. I prefer to go with Cadence, I think, just because I think Wincanton has rallied so strongly, you know. And
that's right. The two schools of thought there. I mean, with Wincanton, the trend is your friend, and you know, the company's cut out its loss-making contracts. So the fundamentals support the move, and they also support a move higher as well. The earnings growth is there for all to see. So that there's a strength there. But certainly in terms of future potential. And growth potential from this point, I think, Cadence has this could be a 10 or a, well, certainly a 10 bagger from here, for sure.
Okay, well, listen, do your own research. That's opinion only research, from Alan Green there. So
Shares can go down as well as up.
Yes, they often do. lovely. Al, thanks very much for that. Speak next week, fella.
Thank you, Jeff. Speak next week. Cheers.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, PCG Entertainment. That's PCGE ticker. At four, Asia Met Resources. That's ARS ticker. At three, Ascent Resources, AST. At two, Echo Energy. That's ECHO. And at one, Georgian Mining Corporation. That's GEO ticker. And here are the top five most liked RNSs on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five. Angus Energy was late yesterday afternoon. Update on next exchange bond issue. At four, Edenville Energy, full year results. At three, Proxarma, new contracts. And two, Georgian Mining Corporation, TR1 notification of major interest in shares. And number one, most liked RNSO today was from Premier African Minerals, PREM. That's the RHA update. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.